Well, let's welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm joined once again by Kevin Luko. Kevin, first of all, happy Thanksgiving. We're a little past, but a little belated happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you too. Yeah, it was festive as usual. Everyone had a full belly, and well, now it's on to the next big holiday.
Yes, it is. Even more hectic sometimes. Well, a lot of stuff going on around the American Association right now. So we first of all want to begin with at the league office itself. From my understanding is that there has been a committee put together by the owners to look at who will be the commissioner following Miles Wolf's departure at the end of next season. There are three names that are on that. Not really sure who those are at this particular point. It's kind of hush-hush throughout the league, but it looks like they're ready to put that person in place to kind of move along. And I think you would agree that we want this to be a person who we know is going to have such integrity that it's going to give the league back some reputation after what happened last year.
Oh, well, the question is, you, me, and who else are the three?
I hope it's you, for sure. That'd be awesome.
If the health insurance benefits are good, I'm game.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be some dramatic changes there, because I believe every person who is in the running of the league itself, so the president, commissioner, and head of umpiring, I'm even understanding the head of umpiring may be gone before the season even begins. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think that we're going to see some dramatic changes to this league over the next year. And it's interesting to see what 2019 is going to look like from this league.
I think it's something to look forward to. And like you said, change is good. And getting a fresh set of eyes in the commissioner position would get some different ideas out there, and you know, from what we could tell as far as umpiring went, some stuff, other stuff within the league, status quo is just not working. So let's hope whoever they choose for the next commissioner will be somebody with a vision, and let's see this league kind of become the premier league once again.
Well, let's talk about some other changes going on around the league. Big story that came out about November 9th in the Cleburne paper is Robbie Fenice, who's been the general manager and president of the Railroaders, not being retained for next season. Kind of a surprise move. We're understanding from the article itself that there seems to be some friction, maybe, between the league, or between the team and the city. Kevin, what do you know about this?
Well, I know about as much as what you do as far as the article went, and the part that kind of struck me as a reason where they may have let him go is that there wasn't really a ton of marketing with the ball club. I know the opening night situation with the parking, because the parking lot wasn't completed yet, there's a lot of communication gaps within that, and it led to a less than sterling beginning for the franchise there. But attendance was decent, and yeah, it just felt like there just wasn't enough marketing and promotion to expand the team, expand the fan base. I thought it was kind of quick. It just seems that 1 year and you lose your president, or lose your GM, and it sounds like his replacement is going to be the assistant. So usually the assistant knows whatever the GM taught him, so I don't know if the assistant GM's got some fresh ideas as far as back in the rail yard, I believe they call it down there.
I believe so, yes. The depot.
Yeah,
the depot.
Oh, the depot, yes. Yeah. Yes, the depot. So we'll see if he's got some fresh ideas and a new look. It's easy to draw that first year. You're new. Everyone wants to see you. It's those years 2 and 3 that are the telltale signs of whether a ballpark and or a franchise are going to work out. We're seeing it up here at CHS Field. First year, everybody wanted to come see it. And then we said, well, okay, are they going to be coming back for the second year, the third year? And the numbers have stayed steady. But we have seen in other places where Once it's not the new thing, that people kind of gravitate towards other things that are considered more new and more of the in place to be than the ballpark. So Whoever, oh, I guess they do have a replacement in place. He's got his work cut out for him, and like I said, hopefully he's got some fresh ideas on what to do to draw fans to the depot.
Cleburne drew 103,000 fans last season, which I think is a pretty credible number for a team starting out their first season in the league there. I would assume they were hoping for bigger numbers than that because you'll have to excuse him. This isn't any insult to Cleburne in any way. I haven't visited there. We'll be down there this season, but don't really know if there's a ton of stuff to do around the ballpark otherwise, and so I'm not really sure if there's other attractions that would lure fans away. But I'm sure they were probably thinking that because of the location, they would draw better.
Well, the ballpark wasn't really equipped to handle that many more fans anyway. They only had so many permanent seats ready to go anyway, so we'll see what the theory is going to be there, if they're going to add more seats or stick with what they got, seeing that on most nights it was able to handle the crowd. So they weren't going to be able to draw 5,000-6,000 a night there without doing something drastic, so we'll see what happens.
Another big change. We know that the Salina Stockade will be out this year, but three players have from that team's from last season signed with the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. We're not surprised to see this because we kind of figured that there would be some talent that would come out of that team that signed with another team. So they are outfielder Jonathan Marrone, catcher Jesse Baker, and pitcher Cody Strayer. What are your thoughts on the move there?
I thought it was a very shrewd move on Rick Forney's part. He got a chance in two different series to kind of see the three guys play, and I'm not sure of their classifications, but I'm guessing they're going to be rookies or LS1s. And if you get guys that have played a whole year in the league and still have those lower classifications, those are assets to have on the team. So, and considering those guys put up decent numbers, but they did it without the benefit of a home game or even really actually having a home last summer. So that makes it all the more impressive. And I think we'll see more of the better players in the team. They might end up with the Frontier League too, just due to how young some of them are. But I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see more Stockade alumni popping up in the American Association. And that also reminds me that just came across that the Pecos League is going to throw together a team. I think like the Gotham City Phantoms, and they're going to play a three-game series against each of the six Can-Am League teams this summer. So it's not going to be drastic like a 100-game season on the road, but for some selected players, they'll get a little amount to a 18-game tryout in the Can-Am League next summer.
You bring up an excellent point about that. Cody Strayer played the one season with Salina last year. That was his first professional season. The same thing with Jonathan Marrone, who was with his one season with Salina. And then catcher Jesse Baker had two seasons in the one season in the Frontier League, one season in the Pecos League, and then last year with Salina. So I would assume the other two are rookies. Baker would be an LS1. Is that right?
Oh, or they might, depend on how many games you play, they might be able to get away with them as a rookie yet, seeing that it was a Pecos League and Frontier, and might, yeah, we'll see on that one. But yeah, I'm guessing it could be probably LS1, but outside chance he could still be a rookie.
Wow, well, that would be quite a boon for Rick Forney to sign three guys like that, or it would all be rookies with experience in the
We
league
looked at
too.
that with Winnipeg. That was their only potential weak spot last year. Well, I believe Mason Katz kind of took the catching spot over, but they never really had a solid backup. And now, if you bring in Baker, if Katz comes back, that's pretty solid catching crew they got.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Wichita Wingnuts, Tyler Kane signs to go to Mexico, so he will not be with the team next year. Let me quote exactly where he wound up at here. It looks like the Durango in the Mexican League, so congratulations to him. And the most important aspect out of there, out of Wichita, is Brent Cleveland takes over as the manager. What are your thoughts on him becoming the first-year manager with the team that he was playing for last year?
Well, we saw it before with Kevin Hooper, and it worked out really well. So I imagine throughout his years in baseball, Cleveland established some contacts, so I'm sure he'll be calling on those to get players for the Wingnuts to, well, as we would say, defend their title. But according to the American Association, it's a little different. But
Brett,
yeah,
go ahead.
I don't see them missing a beat.
I don't either. Brent Cleveland's been with the Wingnuts in some capacity for the last 6 years. And he might have gone to Mexico for, the majority of the season and came back at the end. But he really understands what Wichita Wingnuts baseball is like. Kind of a soft-spoken guy, so I'm interested to see how that fits in with the team. Pete was a soft-spoken guy until you got him riled up, and then it was an entirely different story. But I'm interested to see. I think we're going to see a different style of play from the team. I loved Pete's style in the terms of the way that he ran the Wichita Wingnuts. I think the only grievance that people had was Pete wasn't the one who would work kind of station to station. He wouldn't bunt guys over because that's not really his managerial style. And I expect to see more. And I don't mean to make it sound like Pete was not a fundamental guy, but I think Brent is going to be a lot more like Kevin Hooper was, and I think that's maybe more what the organization is looking for at this point.
Yeah, and he'll get the guys that he can kind of tailor that style of play around too. So you might be seeing some turnover within at least the hitters on the team.
An interesting thing with the Wingnuts for the season that we're going to be kind of watching is the city seems hell-bent on trying to figure out some way to get an affiliate club into the new stadium that they're looking at building. There's a lot of rumors going around the city about what is going to be happening with this. But the one thing I can say for sure is the city council allocated $50,000 to some group to try to find an affiliate club to come in here to take over the new ballpark. And so there's some talk within the Wingnuts organization, from my understanding, that there may not be a Wichita Wingnuts, even if they don't come up with an affiliate club, because there's kind of some hurt feelings, which I think they are rightfully so. I mean, this has been the city's baseball team for coming on 11 seasons now, and seems to be no respect for the loyalty that this team has had. So I'm not really sure if we're even going to have a Wichita team next year. I think that'd be a real loss for the league.
This kind of sounds like a baseball version of a couple, and it's a guy with a gal, and the gal's been loyal to him all these years, has always been nice to him, always done what he's needed, wanted, and the whole time he's looking for something better. And he'll look for something better. There's nothing better out there, and eventually she's gonna get tired of the act and leave him. So this is what. It's like a baseball version of that, and I don't get it with the city yet. Some people in the city council they're totally underestimating how good independent baseball is, and there is no shame on in having a brand new stadium for an independent team. I just don't get it, and what you're gonna see, they're gonna lose the Wingnuts, and it's gonna take a lot more work to try to get a team back.
I gotta totally echo what you're saying because I don't really understand it myself. Somehow there is an idea out there, and I think in many cities you probably see this, where independent baseball is looked down upon because it's not affiliated with something. Well, you know what? Your team gets to win. First of all, let's start with that. While I appreciate that you want to be the double A team or the high A team of the Pittsburgh Pirates or whatever, there's some depth to that or some feeling of pride that you can have in that. If they don't have a good draft for a while, you're going to be watching a bunch of 50 and 90 teams, okay? And if their number one player, their number one draft pick isn't performing particularly well, he's still playing, okay? I mean, and an independent team, if a guy isn't producing, he's on the bench or he's gone. But that's not the way it works when you have a lot of money involved with these minor league ball players. And I think fans are going to be missing out on the point that independent cities. We've seen four ballparks now in the last, 4 or 5 years that built brand new ballparks. The cities built brand new ballparks for independent teams. And there's going to be a new one outside Milwaukee, Kevin pointed out to me. This is a time that I think that there are teams that are seriously, cities that are seriously looking at this and saying, this is the way to go. This is how we can get a winning team here and have fun and have baseball.
But the strange part is, you look out east, and there's been, I'd say, two or three cities that had ballparks built in the late 90s, and the teams just never overcame the stigma of being independent baseball teams, and the teams end up moving. And now we're seeing reports out there that those ballparks are being torn down, and it just astonishes me that something that's not even 20 years old is just being given up on. So it's baseball is a volatile business, we'll say that.
Well, we have that seemed to have been the case in Grand Prairie. You'll have to give me a little bit more information there because I haven't been around in the league as long as you have. But Grand Prairie was built to be kind of an independent team as well, and then the city hasn't paid as much attention to the ballpark. Is that accurate?
I believe it's worked out. Well, other than fan support, it's worked out in Grand Prairie, but Fort Worth has been kind of a tragic situation where the owner of the Fort Worth Cats, they had a really good following. They were in the Texas Louisiana League, the Central League, and then they jumped into the American Association. Then the housing market fell through, and it cost the owner a ton of money, and you end up having to sell the land, and it's just turned into a whole mess. And right now, you got a ballpark that's just deteriorating there because the people that own the land don't really want anything to do with the ballpark. And now these individual groups are coming out and trying to get backers to try to do land swap deals to try to save LaGrave Field. You had the ideal situation there was having the Fort Worth Cats and the Grand Prairie Air Hawks both going well and being the crosstown rivals, and for a few years that was the case, and it worked out well. And like I said, the real estate market fell through, and that signaled the beginning of the end for the Cats.
Well, I know that Dave Nitz, our longtime friend here who retired as the play-by-play guy for the Sioux City Explorers, had talked about that Shreveport, who used to be in the American Association, had a really nice ballpark there, but once the independent team left, it's basically become a homeless shelter now for people. It's really fallen apart, and it's kind of a shame to see these ballparks just abandoned outright by the city because they don't have a team. You're not going to get a team at that point when you just let it fall apart, and that seems to be the case with some of these teams around here. So it's kind of sad, but I guess if you don't have a team, there's no sense in spending lots of money, is the way it'd be looked at.
Right.
Well, let's talk about some other things that are going on. First of all, Bill Murray has a series going on around baseball. What do we know about that, Kevin?
Bill Murray and his brother Brian Doyle Murray kind of gallivanted across the country late during the summer and made stops at minor league ballparks. Two of the stops were in St. Paul and Kansas City, and they're doing a Facebook series. They're doing one episode every week. Comes out on Monday, and just following their travels through the summer, their interactions with players and fans. And hopefully there will be a good, solid St. Paul episode and one from when Bill Murray ended the independent season on Labor Day weekend in Kansas City. And possibly someone we know may be in the St. Paul episode, unless he wound up on the cutting room floor.
Is that Kevin Lucco?
Hey. Could very well be. We'll
All
see what happens.
right, we're
I
looking
know
at.
I signed a bunch of releases and that, but I know that doesn't guarantee that's gonna end up in the show. So, folks, stay tuned. You can follow it on Facebook at I believe Brian or Bill and Brian's Extra Innings or something like that. I'm sure, just do a little digging and you'll find it.
Well, we know the only way it's going to wind up on the cutting room floor is if you just come across as better than Bill Murray. He doesn't want to be shown up, so that might be the only problem for it. So, we also want to mention too, Winnipeg Gold Eyes, the city of Winnipeg is going to be putting money back into their three major sports franchises there, which means the Gold Eyes themselves, because of revenue they made this last season, are going to be getting an increase in revenue and decrease in taxes on them. So good news that the city itself seems to be doing well in sports.
From what I hear from my friends up there, I think they would be well advised to maybe give the customers a little bit of a break, maybe stall ticket prices or even lower them a little bit. That's the one complaint I hear up there. It's very expensive to attend Goldeye games. So maybe we'll see something with that. Or the Shaw Park opened, I believe, in 1989, and maybe there are some improvements that need to be made, and some of the money from that can be put towards that to make it a better ballpark experience for their fans.
I couldn't agree with that more. I know that the Sioux City Explorers have done some rather dramatic facelifts of their stadium over the last couple of years, and this year the locker rooms are supposed to be state of the art. So I'm kind of excited to see that new outfield walls and the way that they're built. So that should be exciting to see how their ballpark transforms. We do want to mention also about Sioux City. Tyler Kane, not the only one heading on. James Needy signed by the Miami Marlins and will be on the 40-man roster, and I understand will be pitching in the major leagues next season.
Well, I think he'll still have to earn it, but yes, it's encouraging news that somebody that was in the association just last year is going to get a shot to be on the grandest stage of them all. So, really good news there, and yet another poster boy to what this league's all about.
Absolutely. We also understand John Nogowski tearing it up in the fall league. First baseman last year for Sioux City was hitting .406, I think, when he signed with the Cardinals organization, but is really tearing the ball up in the fall league right now. And it looks like he'll have a pretty good shot of catching on with the Cardinals, at least their AAA team for next season. So congratulations to him as well. What am I missing, Kevin? What else we got going on?
I think we pretty well got it covered. For us taking pretty much a month of November off, it's kind of gradual, but a lot of things kind of happen. So now we go into December, and the one thing I have been surprised by is how many guys are already signing for next season. Usually November, December are pretty quiet, but you check the transaction wires of the American Association, and you have seen teams kind of dabbing in with getting guys signed. So let's keep an eye on that, and we'll see what else happens during the month of December.
What we have seen quite a few signings that have occurred over the last few weeks. Brian Ernst signed back with Sioux City for this upcoming season. We saw Evan Boyd sign back in Lincoln. Angel Rosa signed with Kansas City. A lot of these guys are deciding to either return or just get themselves locked into a contract so they know where they're going to wind up being should they remain in the American Association for next season. So the one I thought was kind of a nice move that happened today was Tyler Herron signing with Fargo-Moorhead. I think another Salina guy there as well. Am I wrong on that, or was that Herr, Tyler Herr? Let me see about that. I'm going to check on that. I think Tyler Herron was with Salina last year as well. I'm going to check this out.
Yeah, Herr, I believe, was with Stockade. I think he was a guy that was with Joplin a year before that. So he does have experience.
Tyler Herron was with Fargo-Moorhead last season, 2.92 ERA and 15 starts. So that's a huge pickup to bring back, 2.92 ERA last season. So good for him.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about this. There was a Herd kid that pitched for Stockade. But okay, yeah, Tyler Herron was. He's been a solid pitcher in this league for the last couple of years. He got signed by the Mets early in the 2016 season, which was a big blow for Fargo that year. So you get Tyler Alexander back. Alexander and Herron, that's two good guys for Michael Slack to build that rotation around.
Absolutely. My mistake about confusing Tyler Herron and Tyler Herr. So my bad about that. Kevin, tell us a little bit about Twitter.
Well, self-admittedly, I have to say I've been a little lax on it, but I will vow to try to be better on keeping up on any stories that pop up with the league and any of the players that are involved in it. We got some guys playing in the Mexican League and Australian League, and I will try my best to be a little better on keeping tabs on those folks. I know we got Patrick Mintz, who's also pitching in the Mexican League.
I know that the Alex Boshier is still pitching well down there in Australia and seeming to enjoy himself in the Australian League this season. Mark Hamburger's down there, so we have quite a few guys from the league that I know that are down there competing, and I'll do my best to kind of keep up to date on that myself as well.
Hamburger had a couple of starts, and he kind of struggled. But then last weekend, he picked up a save in their last game of the series. I think they're a little short in arms. So, you know, Mark, he's never going to turn out a chance to pitch. So I think he'll stay in the rotation for the Melbourne Aces, but it was a little unusual to see Hamburger getting a save.
Right now, Brisbane at 6-1 in this league. What do we have? Six teams in this league? Yep. So 6-1 leading the league. Who's on? I think that's the team that Alex Boshiers is with. Am I right about that? Let's find out here real quick.
I believe Boshiers is with the Perth Heat.
You could be right, because I don't see him on this list. But we see Ryan Bollinger, who pitched last year with, do I want to say Fargo? Is that right? Ryan Bollinger, does that sound familiar to you?
Not too familiar.
I'm going to have to look that one up here real quick. We go by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, we have to throw this out there. If you do want to keep up on Australian League Baseball, look up Dan Vaughn on Twitter. Dan's a colleague of ours and is the broadcaster for the Kansas City T-Bones and all-around busy baseball guy, and he is over in Australia covering the Perth Heat. So Dan does a weekly show with a colleague over there, and Dan also has an occasional podcast he'll do covering the T-Bones during the off season. So I go to the T-Bones Facebook page or Twitter account and pick up on that too, because Dan's doing a lot of good work out there.
Ryan Bollinger was with the Saints in 2014 briefly, but it's been in the Can-Am League the last two seasons. So a little correction on that there. So for myself, I just want to point out that starting out after the new year, we'll be looking at starting something that is going to be referred to as American Association Daily, which will be a daily article just covering stuff that's going on around the league, looking into things as the season approaches. As Kevin mentioned, we'll probably start seeing a lot of signings occurring about mid-January heading into as the baseball spring training gets underway. So we'll try to keep up to date on those kind of things and let you know what's going on. Kevin, anything else you got going on right now?
Oh, not much going on. Like I said, just going to try to be a little more diligent on keeping up on Twitter. And by all means, folks that are listening, if you know of any players in the league that are playing winter ball and we're not keeping tabs on them, drop us a line, let us know, and that would help us out immensely.
Absolutely. And as Kevin said, we are at TWITA Baseball on Twitter. So we appreciate all your feedback. For Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Pannier. Thank you for joining us on This Week in the Association.